This is from Proverbs, the first chapter, beginning with verse 8.
My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother, for they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head, and chains about thy neck.
I'm thumbing over to the sixth chapter, where we read Solomon continuing in this, beginning with verse 20.
My son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart, and tie them about thy neck.
Moving further over into chapter 23 of the book of Proverbs, and beginning with verse 22.
Hearken unto thy father that begat thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. Buy the truth and sell it not, also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begatteth a wise child shall have joy of him.
Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice. Moving on over into your New Testament and mine, into the Gospel of Matthew, in the 15th chapter, Jesus is teaching in the temple. And there are scribes and Pharisees that have come to him in the temple and ask him in verse 2, why his disciples transgressed the tradition of the elders by not washing properly before they eat. And Jesus questioned them, verse 3, why do you also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition? For God commanded, saying, honor thy father and mother, and he that curses father or mother, let him die the death. But ye say, whosoever shall say to his father or his mother, it is a gift by whatsoever thou mightest be profited by me, and honor not his father or mother, he shall be free. Thus have you made the commandment of God of none effect by your tradition. How dare they do that? Luke's Gospel, chapter 18, and beginning with verse 18. A certain ruler came and asked him, saying, good master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus said unto him, why callest thou me good? None is good save one that is God. And so Jesus is going to inseparably link eternal life with these things he mentions in this next verse. Thou knowest the commandments, do not commit adultery, do not kill, do not steal, do not bear false witness, honor thy father and thy mother. The book of Ephesians, the sixth chapter. Children, verse 1 beginning, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right.
Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee and thou mayest live long on the earth.
2 Timothy, the first chapter. Paul says, beginning with verse 3 to Timothy, I thank God whom I serve from my forefathers with pure conscience, that without ceasing I have remembrance of thee in my prayers night and day, greatly desiring to see thee, being mindful of thy tears, that I may be filled with joy when I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois and thy mother Eunice, we call it Eunice, and I am persuaded that in thee also. You know, just in reading those short passages here this morning on this Mother's Day, it is obvious that our Lord has some feelings about that stuff. That how we treat our moms and how we treat our dads, how we deal with them when we are young, how we deal with them when we are coming into our age, proper age, and leaving the home, how we deal with them after we have left the home, all of that is important to God. And must be important to us. There's something in that, folks, that builds character, that carries things forward from one generation to the next that need to be carried forward. We are here with another Mother's Day this morning.
The first Mother's Day sermon that I ever preached was 47 years ago. And some of y'all were here for that. So you are here hearing my 47th Mother's Day sermon this morning, those of you that were here in 1971 for that first one. I don't know that I could ever possibly think of anything new to say to y'all about mothers that I have not already said.
But we will remind ourselves about a few things here in the time that is before us this morning. I look back, you know, I look out here on the audience this morning and, you know, I get a little nostalgic from time to time, and looking out on faces that I've been looking at, some of you again for many, many years, others of you newer to this church, and
I miss those faces. And I miss the people that were behind those faces. And I miss their smiles and their laughter and the stories they would tell and just seeing them here. We have some of the Willis family with us this morning visiting. They haven't been here in a long time. Ray and Altamay's family, some of them. And I told them coming in the building this morning when I saw them and didn't know hardly who they were. But I told them maybe they'd be sitting right up here on this side of the building where Ray and Altamay always sat. But those pews were already taken, so that's all right. They found them another spot. There are a lot of faces that we just don't see with us anymore. And this is just a little church, a small country church set in a very rural setting. But you're still here. After all those 47 years, you're still here. And you're trying to do the right thing. And part of doing the right thing is honoring our mothers, as God would have us to do that. You would qualify as a mother, I have read, if your feet stick to the kitchen floor and you just don't care that they stick to the kitchen floor. You will qualify as a mother, I have read, if you spend an entire week wearing sweats. You qualify as a mother if you are so desperate for adult conversation that you spill your guts to the telemarketer's calls and he hangs up on you. You are qualified to be a mother if spit is one of your fundamental cleaning agents. And you are qualified to be a mother if you get up at 5:30 or earlier in the morning and have no time to eat, sleep, drink, or go to the bathroom by yourself, and yet you still manage to gain 10 pounds. You know, we say stuff like that on days like this, and we come up with those little things that make us laugh and chuckle a little bit about some of those things. But listen, mothers are real people. They're not superhuman. You know, we remember our mothers on days like this, and it's well that we should. But maybe all the memories that you have of your mom are not wonderful. Are there times that stand out in your memory when your mom was just not herself? She was she was cranky. She was doting. She was out of sorts. Do you have some of those memories back there? Then if you do, then you had a mother who was human. She was flesh and blood. And she experienced the frustrations and the stresses of life that all of us experience by living here in this world. Mothers are not angels. Mothers are not divine. They are flesh and blood. They struggle with the same issues that fathers struggle with, that children struggle with, that grandparents struggle with. Those are the commonality of our issues. They worry. They try to hide those worries from their children. They fuss about things when they don't go right. They spend many a sleepless night. If you're a mother here and have never spent a sleepless night in concern for your child, then it's wonder about whether or not you're really a mother. It's just part and parcel with it. And for those of you with younger children here this morning, and I know you spent some sleepless nights worrying about your children, but they'll grow up. And eventually when they hit 18 or 19 or 20 or 21 or 35 or somewhere along the way, surely they will leave the house. And they'll be gone and on their own. And you'll be left there still worrying about your child. Still concerned that they are okay. Still concerned about who their friends are and how they spend their off hours. And still concerned about how they view life. And occasionally still losing sleep even if they're 40 or 50 years of age. This is Mother's Day. Mama started having children when she was, it was 1940, not too long after Dad and Mom got married, began having children. And she continued having children off and on through the next 20 years. The last one, our youngest brother, was born in 1960. So she spent 20 years in there having children. Now, if you raise a child and assume to get him raised, let's him or her, at least by the age of 20, and that means that Mom spent 40 years out of her 68 years that she had here in this world, she spent 40 years raising kids. That's quite an investment to put into raising folks, and it wasn't a simple matter then. It isn't a simple matter now. Many of y'all, or some of y'all at least, can remember back to those other times and days when life was a little bit more challenging. There was no pre-cooked food in the refrigerator, so that when the kids came home from school, you said, get in there in the fridge and get you something. Because they always come in hungry. There wasn't any of that. I mean, if you wanted to slap some butter up on your biscuit, then the butter-making process started up in the barn, and it started early in the morning and continued that evening when you went back to milk again. And you got the milk out of those cows, and you brought it down and strained it to get the trash out of it, and got the cream in there, and you churned some butter. Now, I don't know how it was at y'all's house. We didn't have I've seen those churns, you know, that's got the plunger that go up and down in them. You know, I've seen those around at antique stores and whatnot. But we were not high-tech in our household at Warspring. We were low-tech. And so we had a glass jar rather than a churn. And you churn that butter by putting it in the hands of your kids, and you just shake it. And you keep shaking it until the wind-up. You wish you got some butter in there, and you're in pretty good shape then. It was just different than it is today. Laundry we did usually on a Monday. I can't remember, Anna might could. I can't remember washboard and tub days. We had tubs and washboards, but by the time I came along, we were doing laundry down at Johnny Bell's store. The electricity had come to the valley, and he'd put in some old, they were new, not all, new wringer washers down there. And so folks from the valley, ladies could come and do their laundry there, and we'd tend to do that on a Monday, bring it home in fruit baskets or vegetable baskets, not these nice plastic modern things, but hang them out on a clothesline. Our problem was we didn't have enough clotheslines, so we hung the rest of it on barbed wire fences and just, you know, anything to get it out there in the air and to get that stuff dried out. And I still, if I could have my druthers, I guess I could if I wanted to, there's nothing any better than sheets that have been hung out to dry in the sun and putting those on the bed and sleeping in those at night. It's just an entirely different experience than what you pull out of the dryer after a long day's work somewhere else. But that was life then, different than what it is today. We didn't have any fridge, no refrigerator for a while, because we didn't have any electricity for a while. And so whatever was going into the mouths of those children that Mama was trying to feed was stuff that she had to scrape together, or have Benny or Anna, when they got old enough, to scrape together for the young ones, to get some food in our stomach. Because the predominating question that we always had for Mama when we got in from school or other places was, what is there to eat? And if once you can get that question answered, then you're in pretty good shape for the rest of the evening. But providing an answer for that in a short amount of time wasn't so easy back during those days. Feeding that number of people every day, you made use of the whole hog. The chicken may be skinny, but you made use of the whole chicken. You cooked and you prepared and you did your best that you could do to get those things taken care of. Daddy would come in from the factory usually about 5:30 and get home. And Mama always had to have supper on the table when Daddy got home so that Daddy could eat his meal, and all the rest of us then could get out in the fields and do the work that needed to be done between there and sunset, when that sunset came on later. It was a different experience, but it was a good experience. I know that there were times that were frustrating for our mother, and sometimes that frustration manifested itself in her becoming a little bit upset about various things when we were trying to get to school one day. She was a school teacher. Later on, when she finally got time and got us up big enough where she could start taking correspondence courses, she finally got 60 hours of those under her belt and was able to get a job teaching up here at the Old Gentle Inn Elementary School. And so she'd have to drive up there every day from Warspring, where we lived, and to get there. Daddy, she kept the car. Daddy rode to work up at Garrison Furniture with my granddad Morgan, with my Uncle Lloyd and some others. They would ride up there every day together to share rides. And Mama had the car, but we didn't have a brand new car. We had a car. And sometimes that car was dependable and sometimes it wasn't. It was fine when it worked, and when it didn't work, it wasn't fine. And I remember that morning when the car wouldn't start, even after we rolled it a little ways, and it still wouldn't start. And Mama dealing with her frustration over that, because she knew she was going to be late to school and those kids needed to be taught. I am not going to say to mothers this morning that you have it a lot easier than they had it back there. It is never going to ever squeeze into the category of easy when it comes to raising children. It is always going to be a challenge. The challenge may take a different shape or varying forms from one generation to the next, but it is always going to be a challenge, and it can always be kind of that feeling of frustration that is associated with it. It takes work. Physical work. Emotional work. You are investing yourselves in those children. It takes spiritual work. We are here this morning to honor God by honoring you for your willingness to make that investment. It does pay wonderful dividends. As you think back and reflect, if you're the age where you can do that, about other times, about other opportunities and other occasions, and lessons that you learned from the lives of people that you loved. I want our mothers to know this morning that you are not in this business alone. Hopefully, you have a husband and father that is still with you. That's not true for everyone. But it sure makes it more simple when that's the case. But you're still not in it alone. There is help in the year 2017 for mothers who want to be mothers and to do the job the way God would have them do the job. This is from Psalm 46. It's okay to be frustrated from time to time. It's okay to say, I've got to have a break from these children. They're driving me crazy. That's okay. Take the break when you need it. Borrow grandparents or neighbors or something to get you a little time away. But here ultimately is your help. God is our refuge. Is that just preacher talk? Well, it is preacher talk, but it's the truth. God is our refuge and our strength. I don't think I can cope, Larry. No, you can't. But God can cope. And He can share His strength with you so that you can cope. He is a very present help in trouble. Not way off yonder somewhere that you can't quite get your handle on, but He's very present. Therefore will not we fear, David said, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. What about all that chaotic stuff that you mentioned, that turmoil and the upheaval that you're describing there? Well, we're Christians, and we are not afraid. We commit not just our presence to the Lord, but we commit our future. For all those situations that to us seem to be unsolvable, unredeemable, that we can't figure out which way to go, understand that the crises that you and I have, and the really hard times that you and I go through, those are ours. They're not God's. There are no crises in heaven. God is never in turmoil. He's never left scratching His divine head, wondering what He should do to help you or how that help should come and what shape should that help appear. God can handle it. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. Midst of what? Of the city that He's talking about. The church. That's what He's talking about. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. He's not running late. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered His voice, and the earth melted. There is not any enemy that can stand before God. So the challenge that He lays before them and us, in verse 10, be still, He said, and know that... just know that I am God. Can you embrace that?
Do you really believe that without faith it is impossible to please Him? That if we come to God, we must believe, number one, that He is. And number two, that He is the rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. You struggle with the second more than you struggle with the first. Because sometimes you face circumstances in life that don't seem like much of a reward. They seem more like a punishment. Psalm 77. These are the words. This one's written by Asaph. I cried unto God with my voice, even unto God my voice. And He gave ear unto me. In the day of my trouble I sought the Lord. My soul ran in the night and ceased not. My soul refused to be comforted. I remembered God and was troubled. I complained. And my spirit was overwhelmed. Thou holdest mine eyes waking. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. And so Asaph is talking about what he faced, which is not any different than what you're called upon to face from time to time. And he said this, verse 5, I have considered the days of old. What did he do? He got to thinking about how things used to be and how it was with him and God. The years of ancient times, predating even his generation. Verse 6, I call to remembrance my song in the night. I commune with mine own heart, and my spirit made diligence. I said, so I just did some real thinking. Thinking about who I am and what I expect out of life and communing with mine own heart. And after thinking about these things and asking himself, communing with his own heart, he came up with six questions. And here are the questions. Will the Lord cast me off forever? Doth His promise fail forevermore? Question 2. Question 3. Is His mercy clean gone forever? Question 4. Does His promise fail forevermore? Will He be favorable no more? Question 5. Hath God forgotten to be gracious? Question 6. Hath He in anger shut up His tender mercies? Now that's the best that he could come up with. The six questions that he was asking himself about what he knew to be true about God. He didn't just immediately provide the answer to each one of those questions in a very succinct fashion. But here's what he said, verse 10. And I said, this is my infirmity. This is not God. This is me. This is my weakness. This is my infirmity to even be asking these kinds of questions. And verse 10, he said, I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. I think instead of thinking of these other things, I think I'll remember this. I will remember the years. I'll look back over time and see, is God someone worthy to be trusted? I will remember the works of the Lord, number 2. I'll look round about me and see His hand in other places and see how bountiful and gracious His hand is. Number 3, I will remember the wonders of old, all that He has created from the beginning of time, that speak a story to us about the nature of God and the wonder of God. I will surely remember those works. And then he said, verse 12, I will meditate also of all thy work and talk of thy doings. He said, I'm going to shift my focus off of how bad I have it, off of the complaining that has been the gist of my life, Asaph says, and I will meditate upon His work, and I will talk to others about His faithfulness. Thy way, O God, verse 13, is in... He came to understand this. The way, O God, is in the sanctuary. We need to remember that. You find God in this place. When we come together each week to worship the Father, you find God here.
And you find peace.
So this is Mother's Day.
And mothers, we want to say thank you. Those of you that are here with children and grandchildren, thank you for hanging in there, for the consistency of your example,
the challenge that is before us as children to follow the example that you have set. We honor you this day. That's enough for me. We always take off a little early on Mother's Day and Father's Day, and so we're going to quit with the preaching right here. Here's an invitation song that has been selected. If you're here not a Christian, the best gift that you could ever give to your mother is the gift of becoming a child of God. And you have the opportunity to give that gift this morning. To come in repentance of sin and confession of your faith, we'll be glad to baptize you into Christ this day. And you can rejoice with others that are of the family of God. Or if you need our prayers for special circumstances, we stand ready to assist with that. You come while we stand and sing.